How often in life do we, or you, or for sure me, feel like we have to have everything figured out? I know personally, I just literally spent months researching website hosting platforms only to decide to completely change which service I'm going to use once I actually started building the darn website. More on that story is available in the conversation that's happening inside of the community. If you want to dig into website comparisons today, you can find out more at makersplaybook.com/community, but I digress. That's not the point of this intro. More often than not, trying to figure it all out before we actually start is just a way of helping ourselves feel comfortable with what might otherwise be perceived as kind of a risky situation. Putting ourselves out there in the world does not always feel comfortable. But also, more often than not, you really just have to actually get started in order to figure it all out. In fact, this is not the first time you're hearing me start a podcast episode with this topic. If you've been listening to this podcast even for just the last month or so, we just talked about this with Juliet Davin back on episode 316. But let's be realistic. That doesn't mean our desire to have it all figured out has stopped. Now, does it? At least not for me. So this week, I'm bringing another perspective to that conversation. Horacio Casillas is currently a resident at Companion Gallery, and he's in the middle of, well, thinking. He doesn't have the next five steps down the road figured out yet, but he is slowly, intentionally, taking the next step. And that, my friends, simply focusing on the next step, is more often the key. And if the uniqueness of Horacio's work is any encouragement, well, I need to really stop obsessing over figuring out everything and just get started already. I hope this conversation is as encouraging for you as it was for me. But real quick, before we dig in, a big thanks to Amoco for currently sponsoring the podcast. You may have noticed that Amoco isn't taking direct orders on their website currently, and while that may seem like a bad thing, the reason for it is pretty awesome. For the past 8 months, Amoco has been focusing on supplying their distributors first. In other words, they're focused on making sure your favorite local shops are supported before even their own website. You can easily pick up your favorite glazes like Potter's Choice Honey Flux or Rainforest Celadon on the shelf of your local clay shop, and obviously avoid those extra shipping costs in the process. Naturally, high demand and supply issues have made it hard to keep stores stocked these days, but Amoco is dedicated to supporting your favorite small businesses first, now and in the future. And that, my friends, is putting your money where your values are, which you know I'm all about. If you don't yet have a favorite local shop, you can find an Amoco distributor near you by visiting amoco.com/dealers. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the Maker's Playbook, the show where we talk all about what it's really like to make a living from the things you make. I'm your host, seasoned entrepreneur of 12 years, Rebecca Ikiscaro. Hey, Horacio, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Since we're already laughing about it, before I get ahead of myself, how would you introduce yourself?
My name is Horacio Casillas. I am currently a resident artist at Companion Gallery. And yeah, I guess I'll just say a little bit about my work. It's very personal, very spiritual. I am a practicing Catholic. And so I think that that just informs most of what I do.
I will say your work jumped out to me on the internet because I don't know. I feel like I'm going to stereotype the arts world now, like having been raised Catholic and, you know, the arts world generally, you say same thing about religion and it's like it's this bristling behind. And then I'm kind of like backtracking of like, yeah, but I'm not that kind of Catholic.
Yeah, it does. I do find myself having to, in a way, like really defend my faith, but also defend me being in the art world. And, you know,
yeah, it goes both ways. Yep. But I find that blend, I don't know, I think we're all complex people. And I think it should, I think there should be more of the gray space rather than, oh, if you're an artist, you think this way. And if you're religious, you think this way. Like, it doesn't really work that way.
We contain multitudes, really.
Indeed. And I also just want to, I completely anglicized and butchered your first name. So we're going to work on that for the intro before we hit.
No worries. I have a lot of introductions of my name. Like, I'll introduce myself as Horacio. And it's just kind of, I don't know, like, whatever you're comfortable with saying, really.
Yeah, but names are important. You know, yeah. I feel like everybody who has a tricky name defaults to like, it's okay, no big deal. And I'm like, yeah, but it's your name. Yeah. That's important. But yeah. I digress. For people who don't know anything about Companion Gallery, where in the world is it? Tell us a little bit about being a resident there.
Yeah, so Companion Gallery is located in small town Humboldt, Tennessee. When I first got here, I was very surprised that this is such a popular gallery. It does really well. And yeah, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. And most of the traffic that we get is online. And so Eric, the owner, he reached out to me. He's been representing my work for a couple of years now. And he reached out to me. I was like, hey, we'd like to offer you a residency spot if it's something you're interested in. So now I'm here.
Well, and when I think of residency, I'm going to ask all the stupid questions. When I think of residency, I think of like a year-long commitment, potentially some time-long commitment where you're living there, you're working there, you've set aside whatever else potentially was going on, and this is like a focus. Is that accurate, or how does it actually work?
Yeah, well, so I did a residency like that. Last year I was at Aramont, and that was a one-year time, you know, one-year commitment. I knew there was an end cap. It's like, okay, I'm here from this time to this time. And here at Companion, it's different. There's no end cap. I would say maybe he's like 4 years. If you're here for longer than 4 years, you might start thinking about something else. But I don't have to leave a year from now or 2 years or 3 years, which is very different for me. I think for a while now, I've been kind of like, okay, I have this allotted time and then I'll move on. And now I'm in a place that is open-ended. And it feels a little bit strange because there's like nothing telling me to leave. And there's really, yeah. And so, I could choose to leave whenever I want.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, do you feel like that timeline piece of it kind of, having never done a residency, I wonder, you know, do people come into it saying, okay, I'm going to take this really specific amount of time to explore this idea or this thing I'm already thinking about? Or... I've got multiple questions. I'm going to stop there. Let's answer that. Let's talk about that one.
Yeah, no, I would say that's probably the most common thing. It's like, oh, I have a specific amount of time and I have these certain ideas. And depending on the residency that you're at, the facilities or your resources, you know, it's like, well, I'm going to take advantage of this big space. I'm going to take advantage of this time. And so, yeah, it really just depends on where you're at. It also changes as time goes on. My goals last year are much different than this year, you know, and now I'm in a place that I can be here longer. So I'm slowing down like a lot. I'm like, okay, I need to maybe focus on craftsmanship, get some new ideas. Like, I don't have to keep everything I make. I'm going to try to like glean from Eric and the other residents that are here and just slow it down a bit. That's kind of how it's been for me.
Well, and how many residents are there, just to give everybody kind of a scope?
Yeah, so Eric's the permanent resident because he's the owner, Eric Botville. And then we've got Andrew Clark, who he's been here for quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
And then Juan Barroso, he's been here for a year and a half or so. And now me.
It's amazing. Before I get ahead of myself, walk back everybody a little bit around kind of the ceramics journey. Are you one of those unicorns that always knew you wanted to do this?
No, I mean, I've always liked art. I went to a very small high school. I graduated with 14 people.
That is really small. I had more people in a single class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so our art department was like non-existent. But there was just always something about, like, I'm not really like a sports guy. I'm like, there's always been something more, me leaning more towards art. So when I went to college, I was undeclared for like a couple of years because I was just taking all sorts of different classes, didn't really know what to do. But I think the constant was art classes. It's like, oh, I'm acing all my art classes. I'm going to go take a language or a business class, which I did poorly in. But all my art classes were...
So let's be self-employed.
Exactly. I took my first pottery class, and then I was hooked. And then after undergrad, I was like, what's next? I need it. So I went to grad school, I guess, that, which I've got... Yeah, we can get into that later, but I don't know. I've got some different ideas about grad school, but...
Corey Brown was just on the podcast, and I think we might have touched upon a few of those themes as far as the necessity and the debt and the, you know, there's options. There's options out there, people. Yes. It doesn't have to be the only.
Right. If I had known, like, I didn't realize that craft schools like Aramont existed. I didn't know it was a thing. I didn't know that I could take workshops or residencies, you know? I'm like, do that before you think about grad school, unless you're like, I want to teach, you know?
True. Yeah. Which I also find, okay, I'm getting off the subject, but it's aggravating for me as someone who has been a practicing artist, owning a business for over a decade, that I can't go teach a business class for artists at a traditional institution because I don't have an MFA.
Yeah.
I'm like, why would I go into tens of thousands of dollars of debt to teach one class? It's like, I've got more real world experience than, but anyways, I digress. This isn't about me.
Well, that's a class I could have definitely used, you know, in school. And I wish that they would allow those things, but
I'm slowly getting more emails from traditional universities about speaking as a one-off for professional practice classes. Because the professional practice, we didn't even call that. But like when I was studying graphic design, it was like, okay, your final semester of senior year, you were designing your resume and you were putting together a portfolio and there you go. That's all you need.
Yeah.
It didn't work. Well, so how long ago was that? When did grad school, did you go straight from grad school to Aramont or?
No. So I graduated in 2018 from grad school. And then what was it? I guess I did a one-year residency right after grad school that I wasn't like associated with the school. And then I went to Aramont as a work study just for the summer. And then when that was over, went back home because I didn't have anything lined up. And then the pandemic hit. So it was like residency after grad school, then lived at home for 2 years. And then I applied to Aramont for the residency. And the call was like, hey, good news, bad news. You got it. Can you wait a year to come because of the pandemic?
Sure.
Yeah, I guess that's where it's at. Like last year was the year I was at Aramont, and now I'm here.
There's so many logistical questions that come to my mind. Yeah. So it's a good, like, at least that's on brand for the podcast. Yeah. Because ceramics is not a mobile thing. It's not like if we were all doing oil painting, you roll up your canvases and take your little, I had like a little toolbox of paints and brushes and it's a carry-on on a plane and you're good to go. But like, where were you going as far as like home to Aramont to Companion? I mean, that's a lot of moving in a short amount of time too.
Yeah. And it's long distances. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So where do I even start? Graduated.
Well, where was home?
Home is Texas.
Okay.
Home is San Angelo, Texas. My grad school was also in Texas. I graduated from UNT, University of North Texas.
Which doesn't mean they were nearby, just for anyone listening.
We're still like 5 hours apart.
I was going to say, the state of Texas is like larger than some countries. So.
Yeah. So I live middle of Southwest Texas, and Aramont is East Tennessee. So it took me, it's like a 19-hour drive. But from the time I graduated from grad school to now, I have probably moved my stuff around, like packed it all in my car, unloaded into a studio, put it back in my car at least like 6 times.
And oh my gosh.
And it's hard because like as artists, we collect things, you know, we are like, oh, that's potential project right there.
I could use this in some way. I don't know how yet, and it's a lid to a Tupperware container, but we're going to keep it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and so I've adopted a minimalistic approach to life. My personal things, I don't have a lot of personal stuff, but like my studio stuff is like 90% of the things I own, which is crazy, you know? Like my room is bare. It's just like a bed, you know?
Mattress on the floor.
Yeah. So that's, yeah.
Well, so has your making practice and style kind of changed with each place then? Because, you know, I'm thinking like firing styles are available, types of clay is changing. I mean, all of that glazes, all, you know, all of that like deeply changes the work, right? It's not like,
yeah,
you might as well be going from, you know, a sculptor working in marble to working in cement.
In a way, yeah. I think that there has been some evolution. Like in my school years, I was making work that was atmospheric fired, mostly soda fired, which I still absolutely love. The forms were very different, very fluid, soft, and undulating forms. And then I guess what there's more of like, and this was before me moving around so much, like what made me transition into like these, they're more rigid, they're cylinders, the designs are crisp and clean compared to what I was doing.
They're super architectural.
Yes. And yeah, the burning of Notre Dame is what really sparked that aesthetic. I went from these really soft and, like I've mentioned, fluid forms to these more architectural forms. So that's like the clear transition. But over the years, I'm kind of still doing both. I can't not, right? I can't just leave my old work behind because I really fell in love with it. When I finally making this work, I was like, man, this is me. But also this other thing is me as well. And so I'm still working on those two ideas. But yeah, I've been to so many different places where I can then fire, like I had to transition into using mid-range clay and firing in electric kilns. But any chance I get, I will use that same design and put it in a wood kiln. Like I will. So then these worlds are just like, you know, crisscrossing. And like now it's all these different ideas that, yeah, I mean, it's still these two bodies of work, but they're being fired in all sorts of different ways.
So my brain immediately goes to wondering, when you're partnering with galleries, because you were saying Companion was obviously showing your work before you were a residency.
Yeah.
Is it difficult, or is there confusion around, you know, because I think most of us, at least from my graphic design brain, everybody slammed into my head like consistency of brand, consistency, consistency, consistency. And so when we're talking about two bodies of work, I'm like, okay, is there a secret other Instagram I don't know about? Because I see... Or the algorithm just shows me all of the architecture of church arches and these incredible piercings that you're doing. So maybe I just haven't seen it. But like how, just pragmatically, how that kind of functions in your day-to-day.
It's interesting because I really haven't shown on a professional, like I haven't shown my other work in galleries because it was my schoolwork. It was the work that I was doing while I was in school. And I feel like, I mean, if you go back into my Instagram, you'll see a bunch of it, you know, like you'll see the early stuff. And that's really where it's lived mostly. And then I think what like, I don't know, caught people's attention was the architectural stuff that I was making. And so then that got traction with being invited to shows and galleries and things like that. I actually, this past, I think 2 months ago, we had a show here at Companion, and I decided to put in 4 mugs that were not cathedral themed or that were the older work. And honestly, they didn't do so well, but it was like, that's still a part of me. And I want to continue to make that work. And so that work, like if it's in person, it will rival the cathedral stuff. Like it will. Yeah, it does. It's like people really, and especially if it's atmospheric fired, the combination of that and like soda fired or wood fired will rival the other work, but it's like only in an in-person setting. Like online, the other stuff wins.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And I think it's also really important. It's a little bit of a conversation that I've been having with the members in our community around like how audiences work, right? How there's different audiences for different things in different times at different places. And, you know, okay, somebody could argue, figure out how to take better photos of the other work and see if it, you know, is it just easier to present the cathedral work because of the detail is so obvious? But I do think there's just different audiences for different styles. And there's no like, I don't know, that wasn't a fully formed thought.
Well, no, I mean, I know where you're going with it, because it's like my cathedral work is also not just like me doing the carvings. It's paired with a lot of color. And so you have this highly colorful work of art and then this subdued like, you know, brown, orange. And it's Yeah, it's really just depends on the audience and what they're looking for. And I would say that companion gallery, even though like Eric represents a lot of different types of artists and different work, I think there is a focus on brighter colors here in this gallery. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think makes sense. Maybe not something everybody thinks about is that the fit between artist and gallery, each gallery has their own aesthetic, or at least the success. I think maybe the most successful ones probably do, to where they're looking for work that fits within that aesthetic because they're curating their own audience as well. And that's successful for everybody, hypothetically. So how did you guys get originally connected? Because you mentioned, you know, coming out of grad school, trying to make a living from this crazy craft. Were you immediately thinking about going kind of the gallery route and that being the way to promote and drop pens? That being the way? Did you come out of grad school immediately thinking about, you know, that gallery route as far as the type of work you're making, the way to promote your work, the way to sell your work and make a living? Or did that kind of happen?
Well, it's interesting. I feel like, yeah, I think students are encouraged, highly encouraged to apply to things all the time. And it's a good thing, you know. So it's like, I was aware of Companion Gallery, like from when I was first year in grad school. So yeah, it's like, hey, they're putting out this show, this call, apply to it. Apply to everything and everything, you know, the Inseca student shows and stuff like that. So that's always been, in a way, almost, I don't know if it's, I mean, and I didn't have Instagram for most of my grad school years, but I feel like these shows were kind of this way of like, hey, look at all these artists that are out there. You could be one of these artists. Like, promote yourself this way. It's kind of like one of my teachers, he's like, I hope that one day I can see you on Ceramics Monthly. Okay, that's a goal, I guess.
Now I know what I'm supposed to do.
Now I know what I'm supposed to do. And so that's kind of the mentality. I just, like, let's see what, I didn't really know what I wanted or where I was supposed to go with this career. Am I supposed to be in all these shows? Am I supposed to be a professor someday? Or am I going to be a full-time artist? Like, yeah, where does my work fit all in this big old ceramic world? And it's sort of been a little bit of everything. Oh, I'm going to move in this direction, but maybe I can also move in this direction, or maybe I'll just cast a wide net.
So how does that then work for your actual kind of day-to-day making practice? Because the other, like, I'm such a pragmatist. The other thing I'm thinking about all of these moves all over the world, or all over the country so far, at least, is like, that's expensive. You've got to find housing. You've got, depending on when the timing of residencies are, that's like leaving one lease, maybe early, maybe not, you know, like, yeah. This is where my brain goes, is like, functionally, how do I take my 75-pound dog and husband and I and go to a residency?
You know, it's...
While buying groceries.
Yeah, it is not... Well, as you may know, and as others might imagine, that it's just not, it's not easy, and it's probably not very practical. And I don't think that I would recommend it long term. You know, it's like residencies are cool and they're really influential, but to live a life of residencies is probably not my recommendation. It's not what I want. It's where I am currently, but it's not easy because it's like, well, I guess if what makes it easier is that I am single. I don't have a partner. I don't have children. I can just move around, but I wouldn't say that it's even, I don't even know. I guess for, in terms of like a career, to gain traction with recognition, you know, that it has been good. And I can't say that the residencies that I've done have not helped me, you know, they have. But long term, I don't think it's the way to go.
I don't think they were built for that either. You know, I mean, we could talk about the historical part of them as far as indentured servitude, basically, but I don't think that's what Campanian or Aramount is doing anymore. So that's a historical art conversation we'll leave to the college professors. And I think that they're intended, that's my assumption, at least having never done a long-term one, is that they're part of the reason that they have that time limit is that they're not meant to be able to be supportive of someone's full-time making practice for the long term.
Right.
Are there just like logistical or pragmatic things that you were able to do to make them possible as far as, I don't know, I know some residency programs help artists with, they have grant programs within themselves and as far as the financial support? Or were you just like, I'm going to sell as many pots on the internet so I can drive 19 hours?
Well, luckily for me, before I went to Aeromont, I was living with my parents. And so that was extremely cheap while also working a landscaping job, which actually paid really well. And so I just saved a lot. I saved so much during that time. And then when I got to Aeromont, the stipend wasn't big, but I mean, it was $500 a month, but I didn't have to pay for housing and I didn't have to pay for food for the first 4 months, which is, you know,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Like I just ate with all the people taking workshops and that was very helpful. I'm now in a place where like, I don't have either of those things. Like, as much as I love being here at Companion, but there isn't a stipend and I do have to pay rent on a room. So I'm now in a way, I'm trying not to get in too much into my savings, but now I'm like, okay, I have to rely on my pots, which I feel like for a while, I didn't really have to rely so much on my work or on my artwork, you know?
Yeah, that's huge. That's a big thank you also for sharing, because I think that's part of where my brain always goes is, you know, you see people online and you're like, okay, but how does this work? Yeah. I'm looking at the cost of gas. Like, tell me how we do this.
Yeah.
Well, and so with relying on your artwork now, is that a combination of the galleries and then of what's kind of the typical way of people actually buying your work is what I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I feel like Companion has probably been the one place that has most of my work, where most of my sales have been through. I mean, I've had invitations to other shows, mostly like mug shows, you know. It's like, hey, can you send 4 to 5 mugs to this show? And so that's really helpful as well. I had a show last year at Encica, which was really nice, but again, it was mostly mugs. So I'm starting to realize like there needs to be more. I can't just rely on just a few invitations here and there. And I'm still navigating that. Though probably not very well, because it's funny because I was listening to one of your episodes with Ben Carter and how you guys were talking about like, hey, if you're not jumping on this like bandwagon of on Instagram and promoting yourself that way, you're going to get left behind. And I just made the decision last week to like take a break from Instagram.
That's what I was leading up to. I saw that last week and I was like, I like this. I want to know how it works.
I don't know that it does. Honestly, I don't know that I'm just going to be honest. I don't know if that, you know, practically speaking on a marketing level, it's probably a bad idea. And they look at me with a strange look. Why did you do that?
Maybe because they're all jealous though. I'm just saying. We assume strange looks are bad things, but sometimes I think.
Yeah. I think it's mostly just curiosity. They're like, this is an interesting move that you made. Tell me about it. And honestly, it was just like, I needed to take a break. I think maybe the overarching like mental health reasons. Like, it's just, there's so many voices out on Instagram and it's hard to like get in and get out. Let me just do the things that I'm supposed to. So it's kind of hard. But I just need to take a break. I'm going to focus. Like I said earlier, I want to go slower. I'm going to just like really take it easy and try to focus in on some of the ideas that I have. And luckily, my rent is really cheap, so that helps.
I think there's a reason a lot of these residency places are not in like Manhattan. You know? Tennessee is more manageable. Oh, yes.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's amazing. I feel like we're going to have you back for a follow-up to see how it all works out, because I'm 100% confident there are going to be some very curious people. Because I just got an email from someone, actually, it's probably been a little while because I've been slow to my emails, as you know. But they were saying the struggle of feeling like half their time is spent as a marketer, as, you know, generating content for social media, for Instagram, and all of this type of stuff. And I was reading it and my brain immediately was like, yeah, that's what being self-employed is. You have to tell the world that your stuff exists in order for people to buy it.
Right.
But on the other hand, that's just my assumption because that's how I've built my businesses. Whereas when I see someone like yourself who is partnering with galleries and things like that, it's like that's potentially the way to be able to keep the majority of your time focused on what you're making and on having new and interesting ideas because, you know, whatever percentage you lose out to the people selling your work, well, that percentage is worth losing because you can take a break from Instagram.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know.
Yeah, I like thinking about it like that. Yeah, like I said, I'm in a pretty good place to where, like, what I'm getting from these invitations to these galleries has been enough. I'm not, like, living paycheck to paycheck. I have a little bit of savings, and it's there for when I need it. And I don't feel like it's, like, a death sentence to take a break for a couple of months from Instagram. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think a lot of us feel like we have to stay on because that's literally what Instagram is telling us, because Instagram's making a lot of money by us staying on the platform. Whereas everybody who follows you on there will still be there when you come back, right? I'm trying to even retrain my own brain of, it's like a light switch. You can turn it on and turn it off, and nothing, it's neutral. It's Switzerland. Yeah. Like, nothing happens, right? Like, it just, you just turn it on and you turn it off. When you need to get more eyeballs on your work, you turn it on, and maybe it's like a dimmer switch. You ratchet it up really high, and then sometimes you dim it down, and then sometimes you turn it off. And
yeah, for sure. I will say that Instagram, like, the invitations that I have gotten, I mean, yours included, have been because of Instagram. And so I know that it's not just like, I mean, I'm also pushing pause on potential invitations. So it's not just, oh, I'm going to push pause on the social media. I'm kind of saying no to potential opportunities, which is kind of, that part does kind of suck, you know, but in a way it's like, I told myself I'm going to take a break. I need a breather. I'm going to focus on some things.
You should have at least timed it with Lent, because then you could just, you know, like, that's your...
Right? I should have.
You did this at the wrong time of year.
That's funny. That makes sense.
Oh. And this thus begins the Catholic jokes. Good luck, guys. It's all downhill from here.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh. I love it. No, I think it's important things to be... I'm forever preaching to be intentional and to be strategic around. There's not a right or a wrong. There's not a moral choice. It's just know that when you make that decision, you've intentionally made the decision to take a pause on social media. And you know by doing that, that XYZ may or may not happen. You're not doing it being like, well, who knows? You're like, okay, I'm aware that I might miss a message from somebody and I've planned for that and I'm okay.
Yeah, it's very intentional, right? I mean, I have my reasons for doing it, but I also know the repercussions, and it's like, I'm okay. I'm okay with, you know, the ramifications of this. They're probably not that big of ramifications, you know? It's not like I'm going to lose on such a huge opportunity, but I know for some people it is. I mean, there are some people who have, I don't know, 20 to 50,000 followers. And they're like, if I stopped, there would be people asking me if I died. You know?
Yeah. And I think this goes back to the being intentional with our choices bit, is somebody like Florian Gadsby, who is monetizing social media, stopping his YouTube channel for 2 months would actually directly affect his revenue to buy groceries.
Right.
You know, whereas if that's not the crux of how you're building a business and making a living, if that's just a piece of the puzzle, well, you can turn it off for a little while and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, anyway, enough about Instagram. I always wind up talking about Instagram. Oh my gosh. It's like pervaded all of life. Pervade is not the right word, but whatever.
This is why I took a break.
Exactly. And here we are talking about it. Oh my gosh.
No, no.
Well, tell us a little bit, now that you're at Companion, what's kind of like your average week? What's life look like?
Yeah. So I'll start with a comparison to last year at Aramont. I lived on the campus. You know, I had my personal studio that was open 24/7 walking distance, which I would say for me, I guess me personally, I'll speak for myself, that it wasn't very conducive to productivity. Now I have a 23-minute commute. And the studio hours are from like 9 to 5, essentially. I have the key. I can come in whenever I want. But there are business hours. So it's like, it is still a gallery. So it has to be open from 9 to 5. And so I've just taken advantage of that. I'm like, I'm going to just treat this like I'm going to go to the studio either at 9, leave at 5, take weekends off. And that is new to me when it comes to working in clay. Like, most potters are like, if that's all I do, I'm going to do it all day long, every day.
that's most people's dreams too, right? That's the like, oh my gosh, I've touched clay. I want to quit my job and do this all day long.
Right. But the reality, I guess, for me specifically is that if I approach it that way, I have so much going on in my head that it doesn't work for me. I can't be productive if I'm doing it all the time. So now I'm approaching it as, hey, yes, these are job hours, but I am more productive and I have goals that I'm like, hey, for this week, I'm going to work on this. And like I said, I'm also still taking a step back where I'm slowing down. And so, yeah, that's kind of how, yeah, Monday through Friday, I'm in the studio. And the vibe here is like, I think we all, I'm kind of taking their approach. It's like slow and steady wins the race kind of thing. Very laid back. They're not production potters. No one here is making 100 cups a day, you know? Yeah, it's nice.
That's so, I'm like nodding away. That sounds beautiful and so far away from my brain, but I also know that's what I want. That like, there's such a tension. If for me, at least, our brains have kind of been like shoved into produce, 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 go, 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 hustle, 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 right? Yeah. And oh man, I'm really excited to see where the creativity takes you also in giving your brain space to think, because
thank you.
Even though I don't give it to myself, I know that's what we actually need.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we need time to recreate. If I'm in the studio all the time, I don't have a hobby currently, so I'm like looking for one, because it's like people ask me when I was working in landscaping, they're like, hey, what do you do for fun? I'm like, well, currently I work all day in landscaping, so my fun is doing pots. And then when that switched to doing pots all day long, they're like, what do you do for fun? I'm like, oh, well, it used to be this. And now I don't know.
Yes. Well, and does it still feel like fun, or does it feel like a job?
No, it does. No. Even though I treat it like job hours, it has become more fun because I could just focus in on the one thing that I made that week, you know, or whatever. It's like my ideas are starting to be fleshed out. I don't feel this pressure to make so much. And so it has become fun. And yeah, but at the same time, I'm still looking for something extracurricular, you know?
I don't understand. somebody also just literally just yesterday was like, yeah, so like, what do you do when you're not working? And I was like, this is a problem.
Yeah.
I was like talking about renovating the house and I was like, but that's not like,
see, that's,
I mean, not, we enjoy
that's
it,
one.
But that's not like going for a hike. You know what I mean? That's not like, I don't know. I have a problem. Hello, my name's Rebecca. And anyway, moving on. Well, what have we not, as far as reality of the space that you're in, kind of the moment in time of trying to figure out how to make this all work, is there something that you feel like either people don't know or the people who are thinking about this as well, like that you wish you would have known ahead of time, maybe?
I don't know.
I know, I ramble. I was like, there were like three questions in one.
No worries.
So choose your own adventure. Pick any of them. Either something that you feel like you didn't know before getting into this next phase, right? Coming out of school and figuring out how to make this work that you wish you would have known. Or alternatively, something that people looking at what you're doing don't really realize about the reality of it.
Right. Yeah. I think I didn't realize I'm on this journey of figuring out if I should go into teaching, if I should be a full-time artist. And I honestly, it's like, I don't know what other options. Either you make your work full-time or you go and teach it, you know? But yeah, it is competitive. It's such a competitive world. And I feel like, especially the teaching part of it, you know, this past year, I did go through a few interviews for some universities. And yeah, well, I didn't get them and it's okay.
And you're like, and I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, so that's that part of this world is very competitive. And then the other part is that, like, okay, if you do want to become just a full-time artist working, say, in your garage, like, that's also very difficult, you know? You need capital to, like, you're going to have to go get a loan or something to buy a kiln, to buy your wheel, to buy the things that you need that you had in school. Yeah, and so, and then it makes it even harder if you don't own a house, you know. If
you need a very understanding landlord.
Why do you need a house? You need
which currently in the U.S.
Yeah, those are some of the difficult things that, like, But if I were to give some advice to, say, a student who's coming into like, hey, I'm getting a ceramics degree and my options are, yeah, what are my options? And so I would just say, like, first of all, you may not need to go to grad school. You know, that is a, you know, don't get yourself into debt for just purely wanting to continue working in clay. That was my experience. But, you know, go take a workshop. Yes, build up your portfolio, but like maybe do a short-term residency somewhere that has the facilities that you need. But if you do want to teach, like, I think that's the hard thing is like, how do you know what you don't know? Like, sometimes you're just going through school and you're like, I'm going to just see what comes out of it. But if you know you want to teach, like, really prepare for that, because it is going to be difficult to when you come out to like, land a job. So yeah, get some adjuncting under your belt, like really document your students' work, your work. I don't know. There's just so many, I don't know what advice to give. There's so many things to.
Well, and it's funny because that's also what we're presented with, and at least what I was presented with as somebody who went to undergrad in the US in the arts. You're presented with like, well, you either teach or you go get a job and you do your art on the nights and weekends. Yeah. And yet, at least what I'm hearing from some other interviews on the podcast is like, there are other ways. We're just not presented with them. And it's funny because we're like, we're sitting here as creative people having creative thoughts and interesting ideas and making new art that's never existed before. But from a career standpoint, our brain still thinks in this like very boxed, yes, like option A, option B. That's it.
I know.
Because it's all we're shown, you know? But I do think there's,
well,
yeah, I hope there's other options.
Yeah. Speaking of outside the box, I would say, yeah, you love clay. I love clay. But maybe try your hand at other mediums, you know? I'm in love right now with wood and fiber, and I wish I could do more of it. I took a workshop at Aramont, a table making workshop, and it was incredible. I'm like, I want to be a woodworker now. But yeah, I think that we should broaden our mediums. And that would help, especially for those who are maybe wanting to teach as well. Because if you can say that you are well-versed in metalsmithing and fiber, like you're more likely to get something.
But even at the same time, I think of you talking about doing landscaping when you're at your parents. And I think of like how our default to think about other jobs is that that's like separate from the art, mm-hmm. that's like a, oh, I have to do this. I begrudgingly show up. I don't really like it. But then I think, well, hold on a second. What if the thing that you were interested in ceramics was like large scale display work or large scale planters? Yeah. Like now you having a job as a landscaper is giving you immediate access to potential customers,
right,
to sell your work if you can make that connection in people's brains.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true. When I was doing landscaping, I talked to a lot of the customers who were like, oh, so like, you know, what else do you do? I'm actually a potter. And they're like, what? And so, yeah, just like people would be so surprised. And then I'd show them my Instagram and they're like, what are you doing out here? And I think that is a sad, I mean, it's like, we laugh about it, but it's kind of sad to think about. It's like, hey, someone who makes, say, a work that you like can also be doing these other jobs. And I think that they, like you mentioned, they should be able to work together.
Or even the assumptions we make about when we see somebody doing certain work, like what that means about them or their education or their life.
People were often surprised that I had even gone to grad school. And they're like, why are you landscaping? I'm like, it pays really well.
Have you noticed the check you wrote?
Yeah.
But truly, my first job out of college was as a barista making coffee. Doesn't probably pay as well as landscaping, unfortunately. But what was so, well, at the time, frustrating, frankly, in the moment, I was like mad about it. But now, kind of looking back on it, I was making coffee for the kids who were coming from the university I had just graduated to, who like, they're doing like the different student groups and networking and all that. So they're in their like business casual clothes and they're coming and they're like not really acknowledging the human being on the other side of the counter, right? They're just ordering and they're like talking about what they're going to do after graduation. And I'm sitting back there going like, huh? Yep. Like, come to me in a year and let me know.
We'll be colleagues in a year.
Right. Because nobody thinks, people don't, at least in the US, there's not the same respect across the platform of all jobs and the things that you have to do just to actually be able to pursue what you love.
Yeah. Well, I think that there should be like a, almost like a requirement to take these service jobs or to like a year after high school or whatever, go and work, you know,
in the service industry, yes.
Yeah. Or a technical job like plumbing or electricity, like learn these things before you go off to, you know, be a big hotshot like in college.
Agreed. I think it would, instead of like compulsory military service, like for some countries, it should be compulsory service or trade.
Yeah.
Because it gives you a completely different perspective too on like just humans, like human, like nobody, I don't think anybody who's worked in food service, for example, can go to a restaurant and be a jerk to the server. It's just not possible. And if it is, well, I don't know, then they're a sociopath or something. And on that note, I have no segue. Oh my gosh. Okay, back to Clay. We're solving all the world's employment problems. Well, what's kind of the short-term future, not five-year goal, but where you're at right now? We're recording in the crazy holiday season, so I also love that you're talking about slowing down while most makers are like losing their minds. So what's kind of the next phase for you?
Yeah, so I think the next thing is, well, currently I'm working on, for this month, writing an article for Pottery Making Illustrated. So that's
awesome.
Yeah, and so that's kind of, that's very new for me. And I'm over here, you know, taking photos of the process and figuring out how to write this. And then I'm working towards, I do have a couple shows at Enseca. So I'll be like at a pop-up at one of the bars, and then I'll be at a more established like art show in one of the, I don't know the venue yet, but
like a official space in some capacity.
So yeah, I'm working towards that. And so I feel like March will be like when things are due. So I'm working on things until March. And then I'm treating this residency, at least for now, as if it did, you know, like it's hard to, I don't know how long I'll be here, but it is at least a year, at least until the time that I showed up. But I don't have anything lined up after that. I could totally be here for another year or two. Yeah, I can't see where it's going to go. But I'm, yeah, just taking it day by day.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's equally important for people to remember, because I think we all assume we have to have it all figured out before you get started. But sometimes as long as it's the next step, you know, you just have to take the next step. You don't have to take the next 20 steps.
Right. Right.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I will get to actually meet you in person at Enseca. We are planning on going.
Nice.
It's on the calendar. Fingers crossed. It's drivable for us this year. So
where,
I feel like,
where are you at?
It has to go. We're in Milwaukee.
Okay.
That's why I was was surprised when I saw you on the Michiana tour. I was like, wait, are you in Michigan or Indiana?
Yeah, I know.
So I feel like the Michiana tour is not necessarily like it's physically in places around the area, but like people come in from everywhere.
Well, I think originally it was like for the, I don't know. I mean, I think it was, its inception was five artists, Justin Rothschenk, Dick Layman, a few other people. The way Justin sort of presented it to me is that, well, we've been doing it for years just among the people that are here, but they wanted to start inviting people from across the country. So Justin invited me, Kyle Guyman, Sha, I forgot her last name, but she's in Atlanta, and then Susan, who was like really close. So he kind of just has people from all over come.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. We'll have to road trip it next time.
Yeah. Have you ever been?
No. So I'm like, what's fun about this podcast is because I'm new to the clay world, I can ask all of the like newbie dumb questions that hopefully other people have.
Yeah.
Because it's all new to me. Like I know some people, but they're like, on the one hand, I know some really obvious people that other people know, like, when I first started the podcast, I could call up Simon Levin and be like, hey, will you let me interview you? And that was totally fine. But then on the other hand, people will say some other really obvious, like I knew nothing about Aeromount beforehand. Or I think in talking to Simon, he started talking about the Bray. And I was like, excuse me, what is Bray? That was a year ago. I've come a long way.
Nice.
Or no, almost two years. Oh, gosh. All right. Anyway. So I'm kind of splitting worlds, you know, in terms of like having been self-employed for so long with photography,
yeah,
like I know that world inside and out, and taking what I know from that and then helping apply it to the studio Francesco and I are trying to get started. So
that's cool.
So yeah.
Well, can I ask you just like some questions? Like, what got you started on doing this like podcast?
The million-dollar question. For one, it's a COVID baby, right? Yeah. So up until 2020, I had been shooting wedding and events for 10 years without pause. You know, just 10 straight years, pedal to the metal, 0 to 60. Yeah. And so then obviously that didn't happen in 2020. And at that same time, about, I think it was in like 2017 maybe, that I got back into clay, just with a community studio, like so many people. I had played around with clay a decade before, but hadn't touched it since then. And so then I got into a community studio. And so this obviously, as happens to most of us, I touched clay and was like, oh my gosh, how do I do more of this? And so I had gone on a short-term residency program at the beginning of 2020 for 3 months. Slightly shorter than 3 months because the pandemic started and the residency was in Italy. So that's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, met a guy while I was there. Start the Hallmark movie, fell madly in love, eloped, got married and all this stuff.
That's cool.
And so throughout that whole year was trying to figure out, like, I was gradually following more and more ceramicists on the internet, but was like, but I knew enough from being self-employed to be seeing people's Instagrams and being like, but how does this work?
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause you, all I was seeing was these like effectively Instagram influencers, you know, who were super cute and always had the outfit and the room and the studio that's very Instagrammable.
And clean for some reason. Like,
you know. All of the things, like there was no plastic anywhere. I was like, where, why is there nothing covered in plastic? Yeah. Like, what's going on? You know, and so I was looking at what everybody was putting out onto the internet and was like, yeah, but are you like, when people would say, oh, we're doing a shop update, and then they would say, we're sold out, my brain was like, okay, so how many pots did you actually make? You know, because being sold out of 20 pots that are $20 each is not going to pay the mortgage compared to being sold out of 2,000 pots that are $20 each or 100 pots that are $100 each or, you know, whatever, like knowing just the... So I basically just wanted to answer all those questions.
That's cool.
I thought a podcast would be an easy way to do that. And then I had to learn audio editing and... It's not that easy, but that's okay. I still like it.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's funny how things... As difficult and traumatic as COVID was for so many people, I feel like I got lucky in the sense that it gave me the opportunity to like actually reflect, like how you're talking about slowing down and reflecting on life and being like, okay, wait, what do I actually want to do? How do I want to spend my time? How is this going to work long term?
Yeah. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so then Francesco, you said, is your husband's name?
Yep.
Does he also work in clay?
He is the professional. Right. He has about over 7 years of production pottery experience. So he is the guy who will gladly sit down and throw, you know, 100 mugs in a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like not breaking a sweat and still being clean. That's the part. Like, I walk into the studio and I walk out and I have clay on me and I haven't even made anything.
Oh, man. That's funny.
That man, he doesn't throw with a catch pan. He doesn't wear an apron. I'm like,
he's efficient. He's like just enough water to, that's
cool. Yep. And cold water too. I mean, I married a monster.
I don't have time to heat it up. What are you talking about?
Like, what? It is 30 degrees outside. Why would you not just turn the tap to warm? Oh my gosh. But yeah, that's kind of the professional connection is more... with his experience, obviously. I'm still the one sitting over here taking like 10 minutes to throw one piece. And he's just like, that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's all right. It's funny.
Well, thank you so much for making all the time. I know we very quickly come up on an hour. So you've got to probably dive back into the studio. So I know we're taking an Instagram break, but is there a place on the internet you do want people to come see the work that we've been talking about?
They should still go to Instagram because it is still up for the world to see. Yeah, so go on Instagram, check what I'm doing. I have a companion gallery represents me. I currently don't have a lot of work up there, but there are some things that they can go check it out. I had a solo show in July, and so that went pretty well. And so some of those works are up there, and they can, go check them out.
Awesome. Perfect. And I will link all of that goodness in the show notes. And I realize every time I say in the show notes, that's like jargon. So that's just makersplaybook.com/podcast is where those actually are. Figuring out a way to support yourself that allows you to take this creative making practice a bit more day by day. This sounds like the sneaky solution to the always sought after pursuit of one's own unique aesthetic and style, to my ears at least. And also makes a heck of a lot of sense why finding my own style has always felt so evasive. As you all know, I love to figure things out ahead of time. I am terrible at taking it day by day. Now, many of you might be thinking after this conversation, I don't have the ability to go on a residency program and have all this beautiful thinking time, Rebecca. Thanks for rubbing it in. Now I'm never going to find my style. Well, first off, friends, I'm not going on a residency program anytime soon either. And so that's not what I'm thinking after this conversation with Horacio. I'm thinking we all could look at our day jobs or the other means of support in our lives as the things that allow us the freedom to take this creative pursuit day by day. If you aren't full-time with your craft yet, but you're dreaming of getting to that place, you're actually in a magical place to be experimenting without the pressure of selling your work. Perhaps think of that day job as the support system that's similar to Horacio's residency. It's allowing you the ability to slow down, reflect on what you're making, and follow whatever curious questions are drawing you deeper into an idea or a style. Before you have to worry about the market and selling and Instagram and all the rest of it. I'm thinking out loud over here on this side of the microphone, so I'm going to wrap this up now before I ramble on by myself for another 15 minutes. A big thanks, as always, to Amoco for sponsoring the podcast. You may have noticed that Amoco isn't taking direct orders on their website currently, and while that may seem like a bad thing, the reason for it is pretty awesome. For the past 8 months, Amoco has been focusing on supplying their distributors first. In other words, they're focused on making sure your favorite local shops are supported before even their own website. And you can easily pick up your favorite glazes like Potter's Choice Honey Flux or Rainforest Celadon on the shelf of your local clay shop and avoid those extra shipping costs in the process. Naturally, high demand and supply issues have made it hard to keep stores stocked these days, but Amoco is dedicated to supporting your favorite small businesses first, now and in the future. And that, my friends, is putting your money where your values are, which you know I'm all about. If you don't yet have a favorite local shop, you can find an Amoco distributor near you by visiting amoco.com/dealers, with an S, plural. All right, my friends, the end of the year is barreling towards us. And personally, I cannot wait to share all that I'm planning and dreaming of bringing to you in 2023. I have two hints. I don't have it all figured out yet, so I'm not sharing everything, but I do know two really obvious hints for you. Do you have an old DSLR, regular old camera, collecting dust because you don't know how to use it and you just use your cell phone instead? Or possibly, do you feel like if you knew how to actually control the lighting in your photos, your photographic world would be changed forever? I've got a lot planned. And I'm going to be spending most of December working on that plan so that I can bring all of these new resources to life for you. So the absolute best way to stay in the know as to what I'm planning and plotting and scheming over here on this side of the computer is to be on our email list. We all know we can't trust the algorithms to get us the info we really want. So you can sign up at makersplaybook.com/newsletter. Plus, when you do that, you are going to be sent my first 3 favorite steps to taking better photos faster. So wipe the mud off your hands and pop on over to makersplaybook.com/newsletter to sign up now so you don't miss a single announcement due to those algorithm gods, robots, whatever they are. All right, my friends, until next time, go get back to making your dreams a reality, because together we've got this.